Good afternoon from the KWAT newsroom. I'm Mike Tanner. Watertown police arrested a man and his girlfriend on Wednesday after they responded to an assault call. They were dispatched to a residence in the 10 block of First Street Southwest around 9 p.m. Sergeant Matt Haig says officers first made contact with 48-year-old Adam Remington of Watertown. He threatened to kill officers and assaulted them as he was arrested. Officers then made contact with Remington's girlfriend, 27-year-old Sarah Widger, at the residence. Haig says officers suspected drug use and drug distribution inside the home, so a search warrant was drafted. During a search of the home, officers found evidence of a marijuana growing operation. They seized a large amount of marijuana, cash, and a firearm. A four-month-old child in the home was removed and placed in the custody of Child Protection Services. Charges in the case include resisting arrest, assault on law enforcement, abuse or cruelty to a minor, possession of marijuana, and possession with intent to distribute. Remington and Widger were booked into the Cottington County Detention Center with bond amounts pending. Watertown Fire Rescue has formed an internal committee that's been studying the idea of building a new east side fire station in the city. Assistant Fire Chief Don Rowland tells KWAT News the talks have been very preliminary, with any construction requiring city council approval. He says the first order of business has been identifying a location.
Where is the best place that we should put this station? And that has to be identified in our call for service on EMS runs and fire incident runs, as far as how far away the station should be from the different areas of the city. And we do have a couple sites that we're looking at on the east side of the city, but at this time it's still not identified 100%.
Rowland says an east side fire station is not a want, but a need, and that's based on response times.
When we're talking about if we're going to the, let's say, exit 177-ish, the Interstate 29, it takes us about 10 minutes to get out there. And, you know, the average response times that the National Fire Protection Agency wants us to hit is 4 to 6 minute response for EMS, meaning if somebody's having a chest pain or somebody's in cardiac arrest, we need to be there in 4 to 6 minutes. And we're currently about 10, 11 minutes out in that specific area.
Rowland says in a best case scenario, they'll identify a location next year and begin construction in 2023. He says the council will learn more next month.
We are going to be having our long-term presentation coming up in November. And city council members and the mayor will see the cost of the 2023 plan. It's a little over $2 million is what we've projected and forecasted at this time. Those numbers can change. Those are still, you know, pretty fluid numbers as well. So that's something that we'll be looking at in the future.
Rowland says he envisions an east side station being about 9 to 10,000 square feet in size, which would be smaller than the downtown or west side stations. It would likely house one ambulance and one fire truck. Well, forecasters have come out with their predictions on what kind of winter we might have. Mike Halpert with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released the winter weather outlook for the country today. He said it's a 90-day forecast that is probabilistic in nature. In short, that means it's their best guess as to what might happen. As for temperatures this winter,
the Northern Plains, Upper Mississippi Valley, and the Western Great Lakes have equal chances for below, near, or above average temperatures. And like last year, no part of the U.S. is favored to have below average temperatures this winter.
As for precipitation, or in our case snowfall, it looks like it could be snowier than average.
The precipitation forecast favors wetter than average conditions in Alaska and Hawaii, along with northern portions of the Northern Plains, Upper Mississippi Valley, the Great Lakes, and parts of the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast.
One thing ag producers don't have to worry about this fall is a shortage of rail cars. Todd Yeaton is the manager of Gavilon in Kimball, South Dakota. He says late planting, a wet summer, and a late harvest are combining to produce a surplus of empty rail cars.
We're late, and it's a slow going. Rail cars are pretty plentiful. Secondary freights, there's freight available, and we aren't really seeing the issues that we've seen over the past, say 3-4 years ago. We aren't seeing anything like that now.
Yeaton says there are areas where rail cars are sitting idle.
On like the lines north of us on some of these regional railroads where they don't have the shuttle programs, you're seeing a lot of cars sitting in storage and a lot of them just waiting at the elevators, waiting for grain to be shipped. There's a lot of car supply and not much demand at the moment.
The trade war with China has led to a drastic drop in West Coast shipments of soybeans. A Sisseton man who authorities say is linked through DNA evidence to a riot during the Dakota Access Pipeline protest 3 years ago has turned himself in North Dakota. Prosecutors in Morton County filed charges against 23-year-old Lawrence Malcolm Jr. last month after state investigators were informed by the state crime lab that DNA from a cigarette butt found at the scene of a 2016 protest was a match for Malcolm. Malcolm is charged with felony criminal mischief and engaging in a riot. An affidavit says more than 100 demonstrators, many with their faces covered, halted construction and vandalized equipment on the Standing Rock Indian Reservation. Malcolm's attorney says the DNA evidence does not prove his client participated in the protest. Two parents in southeast South Dakota are suing the woman who was caring for their baby when he died. The wrongful death lawsuit filed by Eric and Ashley Milbrandt in Hutchinson County accuses Carolyn Niffen of negligence in caring for their infant son, Elliot, who died in July of last year. The lawsuit says Niffen failed to properly supervise her daycare, resulting in head trauma to their son. Niffen was not criminally charged. The Milbrandts are requesting damages for injuries, suffering, medical, and funeral expenses. And Minnesota Governor Tim Walz has authorized the use of funds from the state's contingency fund to help southern Minnesota counties recover from storm damage in mid-July. Eligible counties are Blue Earth, Cottonwood, Dodge, Fillmore, Freeborn, Houston, Le Sueur, Wabasha, and Winona. Walz says that section of Minnesota was hit particularly hard by a series of severe storms that crushed public infrastructure and slowed local economies. The state will pick up 75% of eligible costs, and local governments must cover the remaining 25%. Remember, you can get news anytime on our homepage. Find us online at gowatertown.net. That's a look at what's happening today. From the KWAT Newsroom, I'm Mike Tanner.